welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damian Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, from the band Poopin', from the band Seringe, Arian 13 is on the podcast, and this is someone I've wanted to talk to for a long time, and an episode I've been very excited about. More on that in 1 second, but first, if you want to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutofpunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham. I love you, buddy. Thank you for everything you do for the show, though I did book this episode myself. But Tristan also does an Instagram page for this podcast, @turnedoutofpunk. I have my own Twitter or Instagram, @leftfordamian. There's also a YouTube page for this podcast and a TikTok page, as well as, I think I already mentioned that, Facebook page. All of those can be found at Turned Out of Punk on their respective platforms. If you want to support the show, tell all your friends about it. Tell everyone that you know that there's this podcast where they talk to people about punk. And hopefully we spread the word that way. I also play in a band. We are called Fucked Up. You can find out more information over at fuckedup.cc. We have some upcoming shows in Europe, I believe, and as well as New York City, but I think New York's already sold out. Oh, there's a Buffalo show coming up, too. So if you're in Buffalo, let's go for Mighty Taco. And if you're not in Buffalo, drive there. Just get in the car and hit the road. Anyway, you can find out more information about all of that over at fuckedup.cc. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, today on the show, someone I've wanted to talk to for a very long time, and I didn't even realize that this was the same person. So Arian is someone that I kind of met on Instagram, social media a couple years ago. He's lead singer of a massively popular hardcore band. I say hardcore. He says kind of hardcore metal band from Indonesia called Seringe. And Seringe, I think, is arguably one of the biggest hardcore bands in the world. Like, just look at how many people go to their shows. But I had no idea that he's also the lead singer of the band Poopin'. Now, Poopin', who I call Puppin', I should apologize at this point, actually, for all my pronunciation today. But Poopin' was a band that I first became familiar with off a comp of Bandung hardcore and punk bands that was released by Tiananmen 89. Now, Tiananmen 89 is a record label, probably one of the coolest record labels of all time in hardcore. They put out records from bands all over the world. And when I say all over the world, I mean they've got compilations with bands from Reunion Island. They've got records with bands from Afghanistan, bands from just everywhere. And we go into the kind of the history of the label on the episode, so I won't repeat myself. But if you do ever find any records on Tiananmen 89, I strongly recommend picking them up because they will expose you to, well, in my case, music I had never heard prior to this. So to find out years later that the lead singer of Seringe is also the lead singer of Poopin' off this compilation, well, I hit him up and said, we got to do this podcast now. And my God, am I glad that we did. First off, because it turns out we had met years before in Australia. We tell that story on the podcast, so we'll hear that in a second. But second of all, because Arian feels exactly the same kind of hardcore kid that I feel like I am. Like someone who was versed in Max Rock and Roll and raised in that kind of world. And yeah, we talk about a lot of stuff that I had no clue about. And I obviously knew, as we talked about in the episode, that Indonesia had probably one of the biggest hardcore scenes in the world. But to, you know, actually kind of see how it all forms and how it all came together and to learn, like, this is why I do this podcast, for episodes like this, where you come out and there's just like a ton of new bands to check out. So get your pens, get your paper, write down some names and do some digging on the internet afterwards and check out some of these bands. A good place to actually start looking would be Lawless Jakarta Records, which is the Arian's record label and record store that he runs. And you can find out more information about that, of course, on the internet. And also there's a Lawless Burgers. So if you're in Jakarta, stop by Lawless Burgers and have a great burger as well. So, and check out Seringe, check out Poopin', check out all this stuff. And I'm not going to blather on anymore. Here's Arian 13 on Turned Out a Punk. Arian, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, Damian, it's good to be here.
Oh, it's a huge honor. Oh, absolutely. Like, it's a huge honor to talk to you again. Because we've actually hung out in person years ago.
Yeah. I remember seeing you guys in Perth, Australia. Yeah, I think it's before Soundwave. Yeah, it's before Soundwave. And we were, me and my best friend, Ricky, he's my guitarist for the band I'm now, Seringai. And we were like, we wanted to see Fucked Up, and we got a chance to see you guys. And then you were hanging out outside after the show, and we just, you know, sometimes there's always words that might get your attention, like, hi, we're from Indonesia. We came here far away just for you, something like that. And it usually works. And yeah, then suddenly you invited us to your backstage, and we were there. Did you know that my guitarist has stopped drinking for a long time because of of his health? He's okay. But then he said to me that, dude, if Damien Abraham offers you a beer, you gotta drink it. So he drinks again that night.
That's the only in Australia I'm drinking,
nah,
too.
It's okay. So. He's good. It was a fun night.
Well, and also, you could have really impressed me if you told me you were the singer of Puppin.
I didn't know if anyone knows, you know? Probably some of my friends years in, you know, being a contributor in Maximum Rock and Roll. Probably, yeah, but I don't think anyone knows.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like, as I was telling you off air, there's been no interview that I've come into more ignorant about, you know, like, other than the stuff I've listened to. Like, I'm a huge fan of both of your bands, like, well, you know, all the music you do, and I've obviously clicked around on the records you've put out and tried to listen to it, but I feel like at a real I feel totally ignorant on the largest hardcore scene in the world. Like, Indonesia, like, anyone who plays there comes back and says a show that you're going to play there is going to be the biggest show you've ever played. And you know, just in terms of like your band and how big your band is and the audiences you play to, I just feel so grateful that you're taking the time to kind of educate me as well as let me interview you about something that I should know far more about than I do.
Yeah. Well, actually, to be honest, I think Indonesia's size is almost the same with America, but we are more like islands.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people that's into the scene. When I first acknowledged the hardcore, the punk scene, I think it was pretty late. I mean, like Malaysia, Singapore, they have their hardcore and punk bands since the 80s. But Indonesia, probably from the 90s. There were like some punk bands in the 80s. But they're more like cover version bands, you know, like Sex Pistols, Ramones, and stuff like that. But the true, what do you say? How do you say it? The true movement is in the early 90s.
Well, I want to get to that, but I want to start, I guess, the way they all start off, which is, Aryan, how did you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across punk or hardcore?
I think I was a junior high school, and a friend of mine just said, hey, this band is cool. They have an album out, and he handed me a tape of Sex Pistols, the first album. So it was probably the mainstream, and they call it punk, you know, or new wave thing. So this was junior high, then it must be around probably 86, 87. And yeah, when we first hear Sex Pistols, it was like, I think we can do this, you know? Like, the riffs are not so hard at the time, we think like that. And also, you don't really have a beautiful voice to sing, you know? Because Johnny Rotten, like, come to think of it, it's like, it's the worst vocalist, you know? So, yeah, it inspired us to start playing bands and get deeper and deeper in a punk rock band. And I used to live in Bandung. So Indonesia capital city is Jakarta, and Bandung is, at the time, was like about 4 hours from Jakarta before there were highways. Now we have highways, so Jakarta to Bandung is only like 2 hours. Mm. But at the time, it was 4 hours. And yeah, there's a record store in Bandung called Aquarius. And we used to hang out there. It's, at the time, it was all tapes. And it was all bootleg.
Was it all kind of records that were getting bootlegged at that time? Or is it mainly just like bigger metal bands and bigger rock bands type thing? Or like...
No, it's all kinds of type. I mean, like, you got Motley Crue, you got Metallica, but suddenly you have, what, Diamond Head? Sometimes obscure bands, but that you never heard of, even today, probably. Yeah, but it's really random. But it was bootleg until 1988. Out of topic a bit, I have a sample of, you know this tape?
No.
It's called, here it's called Thrash Generation. But actually, this is not bootleg actually, but this is a compilation that came out in 1991. But then again, we learned that the actual title of that compilation is this.
The Grind Crusher comp. That's right. I have heard of that tape.
Yeah, because at the time, nobody knows about death metal or grindcore, right? And thrashes were really big here. So the record company just changed the artwork and the title into Thrash Generation.
So you mentioned like the Indonesian punk bands that were going. Were there like Indonesian metal bands kind of like happening as well in Jakarta?
Yeah, at the time, we were like in the early 90s, where thrash metal is big and hardcore music starts coming in. By hardcore, I mean like well-known bands here at the time were like Biohazard, Sick of It All, Agnostic Front. You can say it's a bit more underground at the time because it's hard to get the records, you know. And we in Bandung, we have a hangout place called Gelora Saparwa. It's a huge sports hall that we used to make shows. We call it shows, but actually the people attending that festival can be like 3,000 to 4,000 people.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So there's metal band, there's indie pop bands, there's punk rock bands, hardcore bands, everyone just like hanging out together there. And one big show will be about 30 bands probably. Each band playing like 15 minutes or 20 minutes, so like 3-4 songs usually. So the first band will be like at sometimes like 9 o'clock in the morning, and it ends in 9 o'clock in the night, or 11 probably. So yeah, there you go. So here in Indonesia, we don't have a bar culture thing at the time. So I mean, like in Canada or in Europe, America, you have like you can tour like bars, right?
Well, it's what the music industry.
No,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was just going to say, yeah, it's exactly like the music industry kind of exists on bar culture.
Over here, we don't really have that. I mean, bars is more like old school bars at the time in the 90s. So like more older people going there. And of course, we don't have money to go to get booze or something in the bar because it's more expensive. So usually we hang out outside the sports hall where... if there's a music festival going on, and yeah, that's where the scene started. We know each other, you know, and also we meet or hang out together in usually high school events. Unlike your high school outside, we used to make a public music festival, so everyone can come buy a ticket. But it was organized by high school students. So there you got punk bands, you got metal bands. Usually they before the 90s they make it, and usually it was like jazz bands, you know, like top 40 pop bands, and then the probably one or two rock bands. Then the generation started to change and they invite more underground bands. That was, yeah, in the 90s, 92.
So what was the, what do you think caused that change to happen? Where like the younger bands, was it like just, was there a particular band that started, kicked things off, you know, like in any sort of way? Or is it just sort of like a gradual thing that kind of happened?
I think it first started with, it was trending. The thrash metal is trending. So every high school student wants to form a thrash metal band. So from there, there were bands. Usually there were like cover version bands. And they play like, you know, like Metallica, Testament, Megadeth, and all those kind of, you know, like the big four thrash metal thing too. And then some people starting to get more underground, that, hey, I got this tape from Violence, I got this tape from Exodus, and it grows, you know? You know, yeah. When you're when you were like 15, you were into thrash metal, and then you crave more extreme music, then it's yeah. It went from there. But I think Indonesia is a bit late. Like, death metal is starting probably like in 87, 88, but we just got death metal like probably like from this compilation, Grind Crusher Thrash, in 91.
But that's still like, it's still underground music in North America too, right? Like, it's, I guess it's slightly more popular in England because they play it on the BBC a little bit, but in Canada, the Grind Crusher comp was definitely obscure. Like that, like most people didn't know it over here. It's
yeah,
like I, like with the same kids, like when you're talking about these festivals, these all day festivals, would like the same kids like go and watch the indie pop bands, watch the metal bands, watch the punk bands? Or is it like kids kind of coming in and out, like different scenes kind of forming,
coming in and out, but some stay. So
yeah,
so it's pretty much diverse. I mean, if you're a death metal dude, you know this indie pop band. I mean, like, no, not only their music, but you know, you know the guys too, and they hang out together too. Probably the one thing that unites us is the love for music, non-mainstream music, and I have to say it's also booze. Yeah. You know, like hanging out, drinking, getting drunk. I mean, like, if you're a death metal guy, then you're an indie pop guy, but you have the same love for beer, let's say, and get drunk together. You'll be like best friends for life, you know?
Yeah. Like you mentioned, Indonesia is like a massive country and it's very much spread out. Were there a lot of like international bands, like sort of like that were sort of national bands, I should say, sort of like bands that would like be from Bandung or Jakarta that would get popular across the country? Or is it more like a local scene kind of thing that's happening?
At that time, it was more of a local scene in Bandung, but we start getting bands from nearest cities are coming, and our bands from Bandung starts playing to Jakarta or Bogor, you know, nearest city. And some bands, like my band at the time called Pupan, we got more popular. And yeah, we played pretty much almost everywhere in Indonesia. But yeah, at the time, regarding to your questions back, there was this radio station that has a music director called, what is his name? I forgot. But this guy, he was the manager of this rock band, alternative rock band called Pasben. Oh, his name is Samuel Marudut. His name is Samuel Marudut. And He just he's into the music industry, and he tried to shop the Fastman to every major labels, and they're not interested. So he got connection with the distribution place, and he found out that you can actually release your release tapes on your own if you have the money, you know. And when he asked to the tape company, he said, yeah, you can. The minimum is probably like only like at the time was the minimum was like 3,000 tapes or 5,000 tapes. So yeah, he copied Passband first mini album into that, and it was a hit first in Bandung, because at the time there was no music like Passband. It was like a mix between Faith No More, Red Hot Chili Peppers. So there's a funk feeling mm-hmm. in it, but still like rock. So yeah, that was the first time a DIY independent band first came out. And Passband drummer, his name is Richard, is like a famous skater in Bandung, and we are friends with him because at the time we were all skaters, but not really me, because I used to skate, but out of 10 hours of skating, 9 hours I hang out and listen to music with my friends. Yes. You know, so I've never been a good skater. And yeah, Richard, the drummer, we used to hang out in Richard's place, and he has a cool place back in. So there's a rehearsal studio at his house, and also he started with our future manager called named Helvi, a merchandise shop. It's usually like more imported stuff and imported CDs. At the time, CDs are getting more popular in Indonesia. So we have more reference from them. So we just buy, well, what is this? I mean, I got my first His Hero Is Gone CD from there, you know? It's like, oh, that's awesome. What the fuck is this? Yeah, what the fuck is this? It's like grindcore, but it's not. It's hardcore, but it's more fast. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild that they're bringing that in too. Like that they have that kind of ear to pick up stuff from, like, you know, like, once again, that's a fairly obscure kind of international band. I guess they had press in Max Rock and Roll at that time, but still, it's like fairly obscure.
At the time, the shop is called Reverse, and Reverse got their catalog from Mordem.
Mm-hmm.
Mordem Records in the 90s. Okay, so that is probably more like in 93-ish, but way before that, in like in the 87, we got our reference music from, you know, sometimes you have parents or relatives that travel outside Indonesia, and then we just wrote like whatever Metal Maniacs magazine have. I want this, I want this band Prong, this whatever, you know. Yeah. And sometimes we got, if we were lucky, we got tapes or CDs. Then if we got it, then it becomes like owned by everyone, because okay, can I lend this? Sometimes it never came back. It got lost in the, you know. So yeah, or just like re-recorded again, until sometimes the first time I remember the first time I listened to Napalm Death is Harmony Corruption, and it was from this dub tape. I don't really know how many times it got dubbed, but it is more like noise music. So at first time I didn't get it. Then when the vocals came in, it was like, oh, there is vocal in it. You know.
Yeah.
Then I finally got the Harmony Corruption CD from somewhere, and then hey, it's clear. Oh, now I can listen to it, you know. So it's like pretty bad dub tapes. Sometimes you got circled around. So that was in the end of 80s until we finally have a way to record our stuff. And the radio I was talking about, run by Samuel Marudut, they often accept demos from new bands. So even rehearsal demos, they just put it, they just play it on the radio, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And I remember my band, we didn't really have a proper recording. We just record our rehearsals. And I think there is one song that got hit. It had become a hit song in that radio. People are starting to request. So that's how we gain attention too.
Is that the Not a Pup EP?
Yeah, it's before that. Not a Pup EP was released in 95. And I think This was still like 92, 93.
Okay.
So we only have like recordings. Back to the story of Pasben and Richard. After they successfully released on their own, they got signed by a major label company here called Aquarius Music. So we don't have a recording studio in Bandung at the time, not for underground bands, because they don't, there are some small recording studio, but they only accept professional musicians, while they see underground musicians is like more, because we don't have equipments, they see it as more like, you're ruining my equipment, so no, you know?
Mm.
So we have to travel to Jakarta to record the music. So Pasben have a contract with this major label. Like, let's say they got their label paid for them for like 50 shifts. And they only used like 15 shifts for their recordings. And the rest, because Richard is our friend, he says, why don't we just give it to our friends, like my band, which is cool. So we got, Pupen got some 10 shifts to record our Not a Poop EP. And The other one, they gave 10 shifts to this indie pop band called Pure Saturday. So yeah, funny thing is, this first three independent bands were named by the letter P. Pasben, Pupen, and Pure Saturday. It's coincidence. Yeah, we recorded and we finished it. I think we recorded in 94. And I have to go back and forth. I was in college at the time, the first or the second year. I have to go back and forth to recording session. Usually, like the recording sessions starts at 7 p.m. and ended at 12 p.m. And then we went back to Bandung for another 4 or 5 hours driving, and then I have to go to study in college. Then after that, I go back again to Jakarta to record stuff. You know, I think it was crazy, but you know, when you're younger, you have more strength, power. I mean, like today's, I die, man.
Well, that's exactly like, I think once you have kids too, your energy level is just zapped. Like the idea of like doing anything like that, and the thought of, like, you know, all the stuff you have to do at home too, is just like, oh my gosh, I get tired just thinking about
it. Yeah, true.
So Bandung is like more like the musical kind of scene, right? Like that's where independent music seems to start more than Jakarta, from the sounds of it.
Yeah, at the time it was like that, because when this was starting to happen, I think Jakarta bands are more like cover bands, even the metal, the goth. The best band is who is the best at playing something, you know, like, oh, you should see this band because they're really good playing Metallica songs. But there are like one or two bands that that caught our attention. Like there's a Rocks band. They were like between Metallica and Anthrax influence thing. And they were signed by the major before us, so that's probably our first idol, first idol, yeah. But other than that, you know, Jakarta guys were like more, a lot of them were like, they have rich parents, and they always have this original old school t-shirt, you know, like bands, thrash bands t-shirt, because their families are wealthy, and they have they go on holiday to outside Indonesia while we don't. I remember meeting a Jakarta guy, and I was wearing like a nuclear assault t-shirt I bought from a skate shop, and I didn't realize we have a you know that old school shirts that you don't have what do you say? I cannot explain it, but something in here.
Like a seam?
Yeah. If you don't have seams, it's original imported at the time. Okay. Apparently, my nuclear assault has a seam. So he was like, he bullied me like, ha, bootleg, you know? So I was like, oh. So it's like those kind of attitude at the time. Today I don't really care if it's bootleg or not, you know.
Yeah.
And Bandung was, in a way, it's known for people with appreciation of art and very creative in everything. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to music, probably it's the same. So it's common to have an underground band, a new band coming, and they have their own songs, and they played it either nobody knows. So when Fast Band is doing that, and when my band and Pure Saturday is doing it, and finally we release it on our own, it probably inspired people. And at the time, making network with the underground bands, people keep asking, hey, where did you make tapes? We want to release it ourselves too. Okay, no, you just go to here, and yeah, that's it. And the tape company was we are really good communication with them, and they're really pleased because for them there's more clients, right? Even though they only make like, at the time, the minimum was like 1,000 tapes. It's enough for them. I mean, like the major music probably like wants to copy like 500 tapes. But they're really cool, and they no worries. We'll print like only like 1,000 tapes for you. It's okay. So yeah, it started from there, and I think bands were starting to release on their own. And my band, Not a Poop EP, I think we sold about, in the end, we sold about 10,000 tapes.
Wow.
So from there, we got more recognized. And the mainstream media, like the High Magazine, started to get interested in Bandung bands since Fast, because Fast is already in major label and is all over the music news, right? And then our friends, the indie pop band Pure Saturday, they released on their own, and then because their music is more people can listen to it, they got signed by this another major label, a local major label here, and they re-released their first album. At the time, I think that Pupen major labels tried to approach us, but at the time we don't really know the term like DIY stuff. You know, it's like oh, this is how it goes. So. But they offer us like contracts, and none of it was that interesting, so we never take it, and it just we just let's go release it on our own, you know.
Yeah. So, and then it's like around, it must be around that time that Tiananmen 89, that compilation comes out, right? 97?
The compilation? Yes, it's Tiananmen came out in 96, 97. But I think 97, because I remember Richard and our manager at the time, Helfi, was already probably because they order from Mordam or something, then I don't know how they get in contact. So Luke Haas from Tiananmen got in contact with Richard, and he said that he's going to travel to Indonesia because he has a mission in somewhere. So if you don't know, is Luke Haas is he's working for the Red Cross International. So he's like stationed sometimes in, I think at the time he was stationed in Afghanistan because of the war. And then he just, sometimes he traveled to Southeast Asia, and he went to Malaysia, he went everywhere, and he went to Indonesia. And when he came, we just, Richard Marcel, there's a guy from Maximum Rock and Roll is coming to check us out. And we don't know about Maximum Rock and Roll. So at the time, the first time we know Maximum Rock and Roll was from Luke Haas in this 1996 edition of Maximum Rock and Roll. I'm not sure which one, but I remember he gave me one, and there's a review, and there's an ad or something, I forgot, about Los Crudos, which caught my this band looks cool, you know, like the picture and everything and the review. So, and they speak in Spanish. At the time, I was a bit obsessed with Spanish because I think I've seen too much of Blood In and Blood Out. You know, like the Cholo Chicano gangster thing. And yeah, it's obvious in fact, it's Los Crudos. Wow, they must be gangsters, man. You know? Probably they look like suicidal tendencies type, you know. Yeah, so that was the first time in 96, that is the first time I read about a lot of punk bands. And but that's just me. I think I know today I know some people that already in Jakarta that already have read Maximum Rock and Roll and punk zines way longer before me.
Mm.
But the thing is with Maximum Rock and Roll, it's pretty much inspired me to do something. So Luke wrote a Indonesian scene report for us. And at the time, the punks were not, sometimes they don't have emails, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they have only like addresses. But I have email, and I have at the time I have a P.O. box. And yes, some people are writing to me. And yeah, then I started to tape trade. Tape trading is actually a bit new for me internationally. But before that, I'm used to writing, like sending bands. If you have a P.O. box, I might have sent you a letter. I wrote to Prong. I actually am a member of their fan club for some years. And I wrote to Sick of It All. I wrote to Overkill, I think. I even wrote to Rat because they have a P.O. box. So, yeah. So it's not new, but for tape trading, it is pretty new for me, and it was exciting. I mean, like coming from Indonesia, probably people will think that Indonesia is that far away. Isn't that a poor country? Well, at the time it was like Brazil at the time, like more like a third world country at the time. But yeah, they just send us stuff. They just send us records. They just send us tapes, CDs, or sometimes shirts. just like, hey, this is my band. You listen, this is a shirt of my band. I don't know your size, but so sometimes they send me an S or they send me an extra large because they don't know my size. So just okay.
Did you get any cool bands that way? Did you find out about anything neat from people just sending you stuff like that?
I think the first one was Sick of It All, actually. I got in touch with Pete, the guitarist.
Yeah.
And he gave me a phone number, like, hey, if you want to invite Sick of It All in your country, you just contact this guy number. And when I saw the number and the name, I think it was, at the time, it was one Agnostic Front guitarist. I forgot the name.
Was it Steve Martin?
Probably. Yeah.
It might be Steve Martin. And know what's wild? He actually is runs Nasty Little Man, where Beastie Boys Hello Nasty comes from. He's like Metallica's PR guy now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, probably. Yeah, probably him. He's in the industry, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And he played in the FUs too, and Straw Dogs before that.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. That's him, I guess.
Yeah, that's so wild. That's awesome.
I still have the letter. I keep all the letters from everyone. So yeah, I think Pete sent me a shirt, and he writes something. And what else did he send? Stickers, I think. But that's like, wow. This guy, I don't know this guy, but he's really nice. He sent me stuff, and he's like, you know, it's like a, like, you know, sometimes like a friend, mm-hmm. not really like acting like a rock star or something. So that it flattered me. And then finally, I'm influenced by the Lucas Scene Reports or Maximum Rock and Roll Scene Reports. I think that maybe I should write a scene report and send it to every fanzine that's, you know, that have ads in Maximum Rock and Roll. So I just made a short scene report of Bandung scene at the time and sent it to Maximum Rock and Roll. I sent it to Profane Existence. I sent it to Heart Attack magazine, Punk Planet. And yeah, some zine published my scene report, and I got more contacts from more scenesters around the world. So yeah, that was between 95 to probably 99. I was really active in that. It was it was fun time, because to think about it again, that people that I used to wrote like 20 years, 25 years ago, now I'm 48 years old, and I'm this last past like 10, 15 years, I've been able to travel with my band or on my own to see music festivals, and sometimes I met them, you know? So yeah. It's like a long time pen pal that you finally meet them, you know?
That's the best thing about this music is the fact that, like, you have, once you get into it, and especially if you're able to travel, but like even just through writing, you have friends all over the world. Like there's you know, like I could have gone and stayed with people in Australia, or I could have gone and stayed with people in Japan. Like I had friends in other countries in a way that I can't think of too many other scenes where you have that sort of international connection with people.
Yeah, true.
This compilation, by the way, is unbelievable. Bandung, every band on this comp is a ripper. The Tiananmen 89 compilation. Like it's awesome. Like how great the scene was. And I guess this would have been sort of the punk world's first exposure to what was happening in Indonesia at the time, right? Like I don't think there's any other international representation prior to this.
I think it's also the first vinyl record for underground bands here.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, like couple of days ago, me and a friend, we trying to track every records after this release, you know? So it was fun, and some records that, oh, yeah, this one, I don't have it. So I try to find it on Discogs, and I get it, you know? So, oh, I order, I don't have this. It's funny because I have to get a local band release, but I got it in from France. You know? And this that compilation, do you know that it's really expensive here in Indonesia? It costs you a minimum like $250 now.
Wow. Well, it makes sense because it's like the birth of, you know, everything. Like this is like, yeah, from my understanding of it, it's like the Ramones record crossed with the first Bad Brains 7-inch crossed with the first Black Flag record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there are only like 9 bands in it because it's a 7-inch, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think Luke has actually brought home like 40 tapes from here. And wow. Probably it's a hard time, you know, like choosing which bands which.
So when this compilation comes out, like, were there international bands coming prior to? Like, who was the first sort of international, you know, punk band that you remember playing in Indonesia?
International punk band.
Like, even were bands coming from Singapore prior to or anything?
Not really. I don't really remember the first punk band coming here.
First band I remember going, maybe your mother, but certainly Rambo. I'm pretty sure Rambo played in
Rambo Asia played in time. Indonesia, but what year was that?
99, 2000, 2001 maybe?
Probably, yeah, 2002. So I was in Bandung, but I moved to Jakarta in 2002, and I saw Rambo in Bandung after I worked in Jakarta, so it must be after 2002-ish.
Okay.
Yeah, Rambo, but Rambo wasn't the first band. Oh, how can I forget? In 2001, a guy, because my connection with the scene in the Maximum Rock and Roll thing, Derek from Himsa, Seattle, this hardcore metal band from Seattle, contacted me, and he said that he wanted to play in Indonesia. This was in, I think it was 2001. And so, yeah, I just go, I'm not actually a promoter, but I'm just helping out. So the organizing was, they have to travel to Jakarta first. And I just told them by email that you take train to Bandung, you know. But I forgot to say what time. So I don't know what time to pick them up, you know, in the train station.
Yeah.
And I just think, I don't know what time. How can I contact them? Because at the time, cell phones aren't popular, right? It's only like rich people have cell phones. So I just went to the station like at, because we already prepared the show. So the show starts at, it's like the show is only from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. So, and Himsa is supposed to play like 5 p.m. And I don't know when are they coming. They only have my phone number. And my phone, it was a home phone number. So I just waited at home while my friends are in the place where they prepare the show. And I can't wait any longer. I just went to the train station. But funny thing is, when I just wait, probably like 2 or 3 o'clock p.m., 3 p.m., just trying my luck, I came, I wait, and there's like this poor white guy like with guitar says, this must be the band, because we never see the band. So I stopped them and, are you Himsa, the U.S. band? Yes, we are. Oh, I'm Derek. And okay, guys, we have to go. Your show is... it's going on in about an hour. It was like, what? They haven't rest. So, okay. So I brought them at the venue. they came. It's funny thing was the show was packed. The place was packed, and we don't really have a backstage there. So the entrance, if we enter the door, people were like, "Hey, who's coming?" Because the band before just finished playing, and they were right in time. Himsa coming. So when Himsa entered the door, everyone was like there, going like, "Huh? Yay!" They were like clapping and yay, and the Himsa guys were like, oh yeah, thank you. They haven't rest, and they're like suddenly they got cheered. Yeah, and they played, and it was one of the best show ever, because we never see, like, you know, like, wow. Finally, a real hardcore band playing in our country, you know?
I had no idea they toured like that. Like, that's like what an adventurous way to kind of tour, like to fly to a place, you know, pre-cell phones, you know, everyone having a laptop and being able to just, you know, check on Google Maps where they're going, to just kind of be like, okay, we're going to go here. Because I can't imagine they knew any other band that had played there from the sounds of it, right? And here they are just going and doing it. Like, awesome.
Yeah, it's like that NoFX documentary thing.
Yeah, but NoFX seems like they're doing it with more of a safety net of having, you know, the cell phones at that point. You know, a crew. Yeah. You know, they're not just four guys.
I think Himsa they have guts to do it, you know? Like, yeah. Let's just come. You know, I remember one question that Derek from Himsa asked me, like, hey, Aryan, you know, when we were on the train trip from Jakarta to Indonesia, I see a lot of people hanging out on the streets, like doing nothing. So what are they actually doing? So I just simply asked, doing nothing. They are doing nothing. They just hang out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is over here is if you hang out like in the mall or in the streets, nobody will harass you, like, you know, like the cops will harass you. What are you doing? Go. Shoot, hang out somewhere else, go home. Over here, they don't. If you want to hang out in the street, yeah, you could do that. You know?
And it's so interesting, because then it seems like, were like people there to see them, or are people there just because it's an international band coming? Like, were people familiar with IMSA's records prior to, or like?
No, I think at the time, nobody have heard IMSA. Even me, I never heard of IMSA unless Derek didn't send me the CD. Yeah. And I was surprised too. The CD was on Revelation Records, I think.
The first one, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, nobody has heard IMSA before. And also, tapes were still popular at the time. And I think Himsa brought some CDs, but no one bought it because no one had CD players. It's not that popular at the time.
Yeah.
Still, there are some, but people still release on tapes. So yeah, it was the first time everyone saw foreign bands play, especially from the Western world. And yeah, but everyone was going crazy because they don't know the song, but they love the energy, they love the distortion thing, you know? Yeah.
Well, it's because I think the first footage I ever saw of a band from America playing was that the footage of that Rambo show. But then I think it was Talking to Terror. Must have been the first time we did Soundwave with them or something. I remember, and they were talking about how they were going to Indonesia afterwards, and they're like, it will be the craziest show of the year for
Terror?
Us. Like Yeah.
I don't go to the Terror show because I don't really listen to Terror, but from what I know, it was a huge success, because when Terror came, people already know about Terror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was like, they know the words, they know the music and everything. So yeah, I think Terror came here what, once or a couple times? I don't remember.
They've been there a few times, at least.
Yeah, a few times. I think so. Yeah. But I never seen once.
I know you're doing something with Demon System 13. Did they ever come and play?
No, they haven't. I actually met Chris 138 in Roadburn Festival. You know, after we used to write each other. I interviewed him, and just probably we trade something in the 90s, but then we lost contact. But at the Roadburn Festival, I think this was when Jism played.
Yeah, I wish I was there. Oh my gosh, that must have been insane.
But,
yeah.
But there is no flamethrower, so
no. I think
Sakabi is a new man.
Yeah, that's
it's not the old Sakabi.
But that's but like, anyway. Did you ever hear the podcast I did with Jerry A from Poison Idea?
No, I haven't.
On that one, he talks about when they played with Sakevi when he was doing the electronic stuff. And they brought like an interpreter who's a guy from Seattle, and he got wasted and started talking shit to Sakevi about how he's not punk anymore. And Sakevi beat the shit out of him.
I believe that. Years ago, I went to Osaka and I hang out with Heavy, Corrupted vocalist.
Oh, yeah.
And then I asked why there's no documentary about Japanese hardcore punk and stuff. But apparently it's more like a language barrier. And also they want to keep it underground. They're really underground stuff. So they don't even make documents of their own scene, you know. But I think now they're starting to get more books and like DVDs. But so because Jism is from Osaka, and I asked I asked Heavy what was it like to be in a time where Jism played. Oh, he told me like crazy stuff. And actually, I mean, like, this is Corrupted, the doom sludge band that Heavy vocals is really scary. Mm-hmm. But when Heavy told the story about Sakevi, he looks terrified. You know, it's like, whoa. He told this and that. And once Jism had a show in Osaka, and there is a no photos rule at that time. So when Jism played, from the crowd, there is a flashlight. And Sakevi just stopped the band playing and asked, who the fuck take a picture of us? Nobody, of course, everyone is scared because, you know,
scared Sakevi, shitless, yeah.
And Sakevi didn't say anything. Okay, nobody dare to confess about that incident. And then, okay, I want this venue doors to be locked and everyone to be searched. That's in the middle of Jism show. So everyone was like, come here, one by one, open by Sakevi. Okay, you don't have your... until he found that guy. You have a camera. Did you take a picture of us from the crowd? Yes, I'm sorry, Sakevi. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. And then Sakevi just beat that guy, the shit out of that guy, and then, okay, and just throw the camera, and then, okay, all good? Okay, let's continue this show. And then Jism played again.
Yeah, there's a, it's the only band that when, like, you talk to someone in, I found when I bring them up in Japan, people are sometimes like, no, let's not talk about them. Like, don't even bring it up. Let's just... No stories. You're not going to get any stories from me about that band. And Tetsu Arai is another band that people seem genuinely afraid of. Tetsu Arai,
oh, really?
Apparently, I forget the singer's name, but his brother's the professional wrestler Kojima. And Kojima said that his brother's tougher than him. I read an interview with Kojima, and he's like, yeah, my brother's tougher than me. My brother's, and I've heard stories about him, like, legit suplexing people while they're playing a set, like grabbing a kid out of the crowd and throwing a suplex on the kid.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that will happen nowadays. You got canceled, probably.
Yeah, it's a different world. I don't know if, mind you, there's definitely some bands in Japan, not naming names, that I certainly, you hear stories about where it's like, wow, I guess, yeah, that's still like, there's definitely hardcore bands in Japan that are still intimidating as hell.
I'm pretty obsessed with a lot of Japanese hardcore and metal bands. Yeah.
When did the connection with other countries start happening? Was it after the scene reports that you're writing start coming out? Like,
yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, like, today I'm in, one of my best friends is in Singapore, and we often like still communicate with each other. We visit each other, and it was from that connection. A friend got a Singaporean zine called Primary Concern, and I think, and then inside was more like 90s power violence and hardcore bands, which I'm interested. So I just wrote him. And the next thing too, that being a punk, is his name is Faisal. And he said, "Hey, Arian, I think my mother is going on a holiday to Indonesia, and I'm coming with her. But she will be staying with other relatives. Can I stay with you? We never meet each other before." So I said, yeah, sure. Then I think this was in 98, 99. Then suddenly he came, then, yeah, he stayed with me for like 2 weeks, you know. At the time, I never think about, hey, when are you leaving, you know. I never think about that. It's like, hey, cool, I have a friend that is not Indonesian, you know.
An international roommate.
yeah, international roommate. And then, yeah, we became best friends. Then I got contact with people from Malaysia, Philippines. For some reason, I never have contact with people in Thailand or Vietnam. I think I got contact from Vietnam, but it was actually an American staying in Vietnam or something. He's playing like this punk rock, but more electronic stuff. Yeah. I feel bad now because at the time I wasn't into his music, so I don't really communicate with him. Sorry, man.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that about Thailand, because like I went there years ago, and I just recently interviewed Allison from Bratmobile, who lived there for a year.
Okay.
And when I was there, I looked everywhere trying to find punk, you know, any sort of scene, semblance of a scene stuff or anything, like, you know, shows or anything. And I asked her, and she said, yeah, like, I didn't really, back then in the 90s, didn't really see much of a scene. But then there's I've actually got it right here. There is a Tiananmen compilation of Thai punk bands from then. So there must have been a scene, but it just feels like it must have been super underground.
Okay. Were you in Bangkok?
Yeah, I went to Bangkok, and I wish I could remember. It was so long ago now. I'm sorry. I'm blanking now. And the cannabis and concussions doesn't help.
I understand.
but yeah, like, it was, but you know, anywhere I went, I would like go up to young people and just punk, like punk bands, punk music, hardcore, and never really found anything looking, you know, around markets for releases and stuff. But you know, here it is. There was a scene, but it's interesting where it took, and like you said, like, it came to some places later than other places because of access to it. But then where it kind of takes off and flourishes, like, obviously what happens with, well, even you're talking from the very beginning, like 3,000 to 4,000 people coming out for DIY shows, like that's posse numbers. Those are huge hardcore festival numbers in America at the time.
Yeah. We don't have that, small places at the time, but I think after 2000-ish, bands, hardcore, mostly like punk bands, starting to get studio gigs. So they rent a big rehearsal space, and they have like 5 bands, and they sell like tickets or just invite people to come in, like probably like 10 to 20 people in the studio. So it's called studio gig, and it is popping up everywhere, from in Bandung, in Jakarta, in Yogyakarta, everywhere in Indonesia. So that was an alternative to do music shows, DIY music shows.
Would Poopin have been able to play a studio gig? Because you guys, you know, having sold 10,000 tapes, you would have been, I imagine, pretty popular.
We have to, that it's only like a secret gig, I think. Because if there's too many people, then the cops will come, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, with Poopin, I never played studio gig, because at the time we were already playing like more bigger festivals, and we were the mainstream music starts to acknowledge Poopin, and we were playing with a lot of big rock bands at the time. But when Poopin disbanded in 2002, because I moved to Jakarta from Bandung, I started another band called Seringai, which is I'm still in it now.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, we played everywhere, like, you know, like not really studio gigs, but more like at this time, there's already bars that start to have live music, and we played there like a lot of small shows, until we are again well known and getting bigger and bigger. But like, yeah,
did you already have a following where Seringai forms because of Poopin? Like,
yeah,
so it was like, yeah, yeah, I imagine that would have been like, you know, like,
yeah, you know, like Seringai, Seringai, a new band, vocalist from Poopin, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't think it's an overstatement to say it's almost like a Minor Threat already. Fugazi situation, you know?
Yeah. And but also, there's at the beginning, because Seringai is at the time was unique too, because we are more in between, like, we are not in metal term, we are not that extreme. But we are also more heavy than other rock band, you know, and we have like a hardcore punk influence in it. We have Black Flag, we have everything like that, what influenced us in the 90s. So when Seringai came out, a lot of people were confused, you know. But then they got, I think now they got, they know, oh, this is the Seringai sound.
Yeah, I think it caught on. I think, judging by the videos I've watched, that, you know, you found an audience for the band.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, it sounds like hardcore. Like, Seringai, like, to me, is a hardcore band. Like, do you consider it just like a hardcore band? Like, not just a hardcore band, to minimize it, but like,
I think that is, we have 2 feet in the hardcore and the metal sound, metal scene. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because we don't play, I mean, like, I really love death metal, old school death metal sound bands, but sometimes we put it a bit in Seringai music, but not too much. So maybe that's why Seringai is not that extreme or change. I don't know, maybe one day. But yeah, but we have a hardcore roots for sure.
Yeah, it's, I mean, awesome.
My guitarist is really loves Bad Brains. He loves Sick of It All. And he also liked alternative rock at the time, like Smashing Pumpkins, old Smashing Pumpkins, and Ned's Atomic Dustbin. Those kind of bands.
It's funny because Ned's Atomic Dustbin is a band that I always associate with alternative music, indie music. And then only like recently did I start realizing that they were playing with like all the punk bands in England, and they were kind of like came out of that punk scene in England too.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that. The UK scene is more diverse, you think? Don't you think?
It's interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm that's why I love looking at all these different things, because I think there's, you know, I think that it's interesting now talking to some of these younger bands that are coming out of the UK, because the UK's got such a cool, vibrant scene, but there doesn't feel like there's any sort of connection to any of that sort of 90s UK stuff that I loved. So it's, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I don't know. It's, I love that UK stuff, all of it, the whole way through. And yeah, I find it diverse, but I know you're right. Cause there would have been shows that would have had Mega City 4 and like, maybe not Napalm Death, but an Earache style band on the same bill. And it would have made sense at a certain point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you have, bands, t-shirts, you know, like t-shirts like Max Cavalera or people in Napalm Death really, have an impact on us too. Mm-hmm. You know, what's in like in magazine like Metal Maniacs or Rip or other, you know, sometimes you see Max Cavalera wearing like a Sick of It All t-shirt. And we were into thrash metal at that time, and we were like, hey, look, Max wearing a Sick of It All t-shirt. Wow, that is cool. He's open-minded, you know?
Yeah.
So we don't feel guilty wearing other bands' t-shirt that is not metal. I mean, like Mitch Harris from Napalm Death, in Utopia Banished, he wears like a Curve t-shirt. Which is more like a indie alternative rock band. You're like, oh my God, Mitch is so open-minded, you know? So we were like, yeah, I think that's okay. We listen to extreme music and also listen to other things music. And then we start to blend things. I mean, like, people don't know, but in some of Seringai songs, we steal a beat or two from Slow Dive, you know?
Yes. But it's funny because like all the people you mentioned there, like Rachel from Slow Dive was on the podcast or Barney from Napalm Death has been on. Max is someone I've just punished at Soundwave actually. But like all these people are from punk, you know, and all these people kind of connect back to punk and hardcore. Like it's fascinating how it's like sort of this common DNA that's international, you know, like where all these interesting people are like all drawn to this thing.
Yeah, maybe because it's the youth, I guess. Probably because punk is like, yeah, well, you can do it yourself, you know?
Yeah, like you said,
you don't have to be like very skilled to play this punk music and you can say whatever you want. You know, I mean, like you have bands like Crass, you have bands like Rudimentary Penny, but also you have bands like Gigi Allen. You know, it's like, yes. Oh, so diverse.
Yeah, exactly. No, it definitely, and like you said in the beginning, right, when you heard the Sex Pistols, like John Lydon is actively a bad, quote unquote, bad singer, but it sounds awesome. So anyone can do this, you know, like that's the permission for all of us to like, go out there and form a band.
Yeah, and uglier too. I mean, your role model is Johnny Rotten, and you don't have the quality as Johnny Rotten, then you go uglier.
Yeah, Gigi Allen. There's a Gigi Allen uglier.
Yeah.
Who's the Gigi Allen of the Bandung scene? Like, was there anyone that was...
No, nobody will dare that. No. Because probably too, in a way... In Indonesia is a religious country, so there are things that a lot of things are forbidden too. But because of that upbringing, so people are not going as extreme as Gigi Allen. I remember that only like this Jakarta band called Waiting Room. They were playing more like a ska punk band, and their vocalist always getting naked on stage. That is the far as I can remember, the farthest from what I can remember. But
a naked ska band's pretty extreme. Like that might be more extreme than Gigi Allen for me.
Yeah. But what else? The Gigi Allen of... No. We have a lot of like a drunken guy. Yeah, it's pretty common. Like drunken guys a lot.
Because there's that Vice documentary, like you bring up the fact that it's a religious country. There's that Vice documentary that came out, I guess, 8 or 9 years ago about all the kids getting busted. And obviously it's a massive country. And so I imagine that's worlds away from Bandung and Jakarta where this is happening. But is there any sort of like, is there any sort of issues with government and police in terms of like, you know, I guess there is everywhere, but like in terms of being a punk band, or especially early on?
Yeah, some, well, actually not only punk bands, but some rock bands, is banned by the pigs because of their lyrics, their political lyrics. I remember, even, Seringai, we have a t-shirt, based on our song, Lencana. Lencana means the badge. It's obviously about the cops. We criticized them in that song, and we have this t-shirt. It was like a zombie cop wielding a stick, you know, and we and apparently some fans were, the cops just pulled them and said, "What are you wearing?" Because it has a cop artwork on it, a zombie artwork, and they just stripped them down, and they, and the fans were like, message us like, "Hey man, the cops just stripped me off and take away my shirt because of that specific shirt and song." And sometimes they told us with like, they were proud of it. "Yeah man, my shirt is offensive for them, you know." And then we got, after a while, there is a merchandise shop in Bandung that got raided by the cops because of that shirt, and that shirt were like they taken off from the shop, and in a way they called the band to know, you know, to go what's up. So we traveled from Jakarta, from Jakarta, because I was living in Jakarta, to Bandung, to the cop station, and we got interrogated, you know. So yeah, it's
over
funny.
The shirt.
Over the shirt, because it's against the law to criticize them or to talk shit about them. But funny thing is, the design is actually safe. We just drew. So I just bring everything I needed, like my artworks, because I draw that shirt. And they asked us, why do you depict a cop like this? This is like more like horrible, you know, zombie-fied cop. Then I told them that, but my artwork is like that. Everything with the zombie-fied thing or skull is awesome, like this. So I showed them all of my artwork, and it's something I merchandise. And this is okay. And on the back, we have words like "to serve and protect, but who?" And they were asking me about that. "What do you mean with this design?" I told them that, like, I'm just asking, who? To serve and protect who? I'm asking to who? They ask everyone, to you, to myself, to the public. So I mean, like, apparently we don't, fortunately we don't write "fuck the cops" or "pigs" or something like that. So it's a pretty safe design. Yeah. But in a way too, it is offensive to them. So we got away with that. And it was like a 2004 song. We wrote that in 2003, 2004, and still relates with us until this day.
Well, it's it's something international too, right? Like that.
Yeah.
That song plays in, sadly, every country.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
But the cops here are really corrupt.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, it seems like what you have to deal with, you know, like sort of MDC, I hear MDC, it was pretty rough for them to tour, but like for the most part, you know, punk bands don't have to worry about that. And especially because I guess as the band gets bigger
things like this become more of an issue because now you're more on everyone's radar.
Yeah.
Like it's one thing when no one cares and you say it. It's another thing when, you know, it's a popular band saying it.
Yes, but actually it's an old song, so let's just say that song is from our first EP, but the song is more popular with the t-shirt than the song.
Yeah, okay.
Because people will more recognize our other songs, you know, yeah, after a while.
Yeah.
I got some cops like coming to me and then they're like, "Hey man, I really like Seringai, man. I saw you at this place, I saw you at that place." And all the time the cop was talking, I was always thinking, "But does he know about that Lanzana song, you know?"
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird situation to be in when it's someone you like actively disagreeing with telling you they like your art, you know, and you're like, wait, like, you know what I'm saying, right? Like, you know, this is about you. Like, that's why I wrote this. Right.
But today too, there's like, you know, it's not only to Seringai, but a lot of band, probably especially like this past like 5-10 years, like I don't, you know, like when internationally, like when Trump era coming, it's like people are disagreeing with bands. It was like, why you disagree? Don't you ever read the lyrics? That's what it's all about, you know?
Yes. It's been like this the whole time.
Stop talking, just play your music. But the music is like Napalm Death lyrics. Like, hey, did you never read the lyrics or what?
Has it kind of spread there? Because like it feels like this Trump era has kind of swept everywhere. You know, like every country is kind of
especially in Indonesia, because when Trump and Obama thingy, their Trump tactics is copied by over here is presidential campaign. The other when Jokowi and Prabowo thing. If Jokowi is the elected president at the time, and his other guy is Prabowo, and they use that tactic too, you know, not really like Trump, but then we got polarized and like divided into two. I mean, like especially in Facebook, you know, like I know a lot of friends that I know them, then suddenly like, oh, apparently you're a racist. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's like, oh shit, I didn't know.
You're right. Like it is something that was so globally universal, it seems, you know, and it's weird. It's weird to see it happen in the punk scene, you know, like people that I was like,
oh, it's really weird, especially now. And after COVID too, you know, there's like, you know, like this guy like John Joseph, you know,
yeah.
Like I used to follow him. It's like, oh,
yeah. Well, it's like, I watched this, my friend, Chris Estrada sent me this documentary about skinheads in Malaysia. I don't know if you've seen this thing. The Fader, I think, put it out a couple years ago.
Okay.
And it was amazing to watch because it was the exact same sort of skinhead thing that you see play out in every country that has skinheads, where there's three groups of skinheads. There's anti-fascist skinheads. There are the Nazi skinheads. And then there are the fence-sitter skinheads, who are pretty much Nazi skinheads. Like there's no, you know, like if you're going to hang out with Nazis, you're kind of going to be a Nazi.
Yeah.
It's sadly like anytime someone says like, oh, I'm not left or right, most of the time they wind up being pretty right.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah, I haven't seen the documentary about the Malaysian skinheads, but
I'll send it to you. You got to see it. I think you'll dig it.
Yeah, I mean, like there's a lot of books, and my friends in Malaysia always talk about it. Like, we do have like skinheads here. They're against Indians. They're against Chinese. They were like, something called brown power or Malay power, something like that.
I think that's the thing, Malay power, I think is what they say Malay in the documentary. Power. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just that's pretty absurd. We do have some skinheads like that here, but apparently the anti-Nazi thing, the Afra thing, is much stronger here, so they just easily crush.
Yeah, that's the weird thing in seeing the documentary about the skinheads in Malaysia. Just it seems like there's a huge right, at least the way this documentary portrays it, like a huge right-wing skinhead scene there.
Probably because Malaysia too is a religious country, so it tends more to be conservative, probably. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of, Indonesian workers there too, immigrants, so maybe that.
Yeah, it's, once again, it's like so fascinating where, you know, that's another thing that seems to pop up everywhere there's a punk scene, is there sort of like far right skinhead thing. And it's, you know, cause you can, once again, you can trace it to the origins of where it starts, and it's bizarre how it spreads kind of with punk. Like it's almost like this like little disease that comes with all the great DIY culture stuff.
Yeah. 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 And after Trump thing that everyone came out from the closet too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, finally I can say this, I can say that. And what are they saying is more like fascist thing, racist thing. Yeah, it's crazy.
So are you like, is like, I know you tour to like Singapore. I know you've said you've like toured around, like how much international touring are you able to in Seringai?
Oh, not much actually for Seringai. We only played Singapore, Malaysia and Japan. That's the farthest. But there are a lot of bands that played, our friends in metal band Burger Kill, they played in Europe. And also, have you heard about Senyawa?
No.
Senyawa is more like a experimental band. The vocals are more like, you know, Mike Patton-ish. Do you know Ruins?
Yes, from Japan.
From Japan? Ruins.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yawa has a lot of influence from there. And the other player, they are like a duo. The one is the vocals, where he handles, the vocals are more like an instrument. And the other is like he made the instrument himself from bamboo. It's really interesting. Awesome. I'll send you the list. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have a collaboration with Stefan O'Malley from Sun.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they toured, they have, they're under a European, I think they're under a European management or something, you know, like international. So they played a lot in Europe as well, like touring like for a month.
I hope I get to play with you or see you sometime. Like, I hope you guys get come over here. It'd be so sick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, last night I just, You fucked up has a lot of releases. I try to follow, but sometimes you can't, you know? So last night I just found out that you have a LP called Zanzibar.
Yeah, it's all instrumental. Do you want one? I can send you one.
I already bought it. Discount. Like, oh, I don't have this. I didn't hear about this. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we they got a film festival here. Approached them about doing the score for this film Zanzibar.
I see.
And I just had a kid, so I was like, oh, why don't you guys do it as an instrumental thing? Because and they did it as an all instrumental thing, and it was it was amazing. I got to watch them perform it live in the crowd, and they're much more talented than me, you know. As a lead singer, you know that we carry the ego burden, they carry the talent burden, but we have to carry the ego.
<All right. laughs> Cool, cool. Yeah, yeah. I think the most records from a band is that I have is from Fucked Up, from you, and also Thou.
Oh, that's amazing. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, anything you need, like I would be, and also I'd like very happily trade you for your own records and other bands from Indonesia.
Let's do it.
Because it is definitely like, as I feel like it, you know, punk and hardcore even more maybe sometimes or less sometimes, like, you know, there's like such a obsession with Japanese punk or with British punk or with American punk or Canadian punk or even Australian punk. But there's like, there's a real lack of understanding of how amazing and global this is. Like, it's in every country, and stuff that's happening in Indonesia is like unbelievable, and like has been unbelievable since like 97 when I got like this compilation. Like, it's awesome how ripping like every band, and maybe it was just the Bang Dung scene back then, but like every band on this comp slays.
Yeah. I mean, now, at first it was Bandung, but now you have internet and everything, so it's easier to get access. It's easier to get access to the internet, and it's easier to got reference nowadays. So I think that sometimes you got a demo from this shoegaze band, but from a really small city in Java. It was like, wow. It's usually like, you know, shoegaze at the time was more like a big city thing, you know, because but now you have like a lot of places, small towns, like, oh, this sounds really good. Wow. They have now the reference is like, there's no boundaries.
Are there places like some of the more conservative provinces? Are there places that you can't tour or places that it's kind of harder to tour?
Yeah, there's a place called Aceh, and I think we have a couple offer from there, but then the promoter got back to us and I'm sorry, you guys can play because you don't, your lyrics or your image is not really Islamic to the government there. So yeah, Aceh is pretty much the most religious continent in Indonesia, I think, and some places, but there's some places, but there's not really they don't really have a music scene there, so we don't really got offer from there, but we got we played in Indonesia around a lot, from Sumatra, Sulawesi, Java, Bali, Lombok, Kalimantan, Borneo. You know, like touring there is like if you tour Europe, you go like 2 hours, then you're already in Europe, you're already in another country, but over here you're in other continent.
Yeah, completely different continent at that point. It's and I imagine touring, because like there's a lot of islands, it's, you know, like flying would be the main way to do it. You can't really do a driving tour.
Oh, where? Oh, in here?
Indonesia, yeah.
If you tour from tour Java Bali, you can do it by driving, but I think if you wanted to go to Sulawesi, you can still drive to Sumatra, but usually in Sumatra between cities is very far, probably like in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to Sulawesi, it would be a bit harder if you drive, because from each city it is like mountains and going up, down, and there are not really, they don't have highways yet, something like that.
Yeah.
So mostly we have flights to the bigger cities. Have you played in Southeast Asia? I don't think so, right?
No, we did. The only thing we've ever really done is we were supposed to do like a little bit more of an extensive tour one time, and there was a bunch of countries on it, and maybe Indonesia was. I know Singapore definitely was, but at the last second it kind of fell apart, and we only ended up doing Taiwan and Hong Kong after doing Australia. We toured China one time as well, but like, you know, like that's really the extent of it. And as I say, like I've always watched videos of, you know, yourselves or international bands going and playing these shows where it's just like, damn, that's awesome. That's such a cool vibe.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say,
maybe someday if you toured, I don't know, if you toured Japan or you toured Australia, I don't really organize shows, but I can, give you contacts you probably can contact this dude, this guy.
Yeah, like definitely. If we ever get invited back, I don't know. It's funny with Fucked Up. It's like at this point, you know, it's kind of like we get stuck in the same touring cycles, and it happens to every band, right? And
probably because are you in some kind of bookings, international bookings?
We do. We're booked out of the UK.
Oh, okay, so probably their circle is the same. That's why you have the same circle, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's funny because like I guess we haven't been invited back to Japan in a really long time, and we did Australia just before the pandemic, but I think we were kind of like burnt out. So the idea of like trying to do any more touring after it was kind of like out of the question. But you know, post pandemic, like being back touring, oh my gosh, if I ever given the opportunity again, you better believe I'm going to be doing it.
Yeah, I mean, those 3 years are just like missing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. And it made me appreciate all of it so much more.
Yeah.
Because like not being able
to. I remember playing our first show after the pandemic. It was like there's no 3 years. You know, it's like we are really happy to do it and finally on stage. I mean, in COVID era, we got offered to play like a live streaming thing. But we don't really enjoy that, so we just turn it down because, like, for some songs we made music videos, but live streaming is almost like music videos too. So, not interested. But some bands are into it, so
I'm the same way.
COVID era, it's a lot of live streaming bands doing it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I would not. We couldn't do it. Like, I just looked at it and was like, I can't. I couldn't imagine trying to perform like that.
Yeah.
It feel too weird, you know, like just singing into the void like that and like.
Yeah.
You know, it's a.
There's no interaction. Yeah.
Well, this has been an unbelievable interaction. And anytime you want to come back on this show and talk about Indonesian hardcore, international hardcore, whatever, you know, the door is always open.
All right. Thank you, Damien.
Thank you, Aryan, for coming on the show. And you heard right there, Aryan will be back for part two at some point in the future to talk about more stuff. And I can learn more stuff. This is why I do this. Oh my gosh. This is one of my favorite episodes I've ever gotten to do on this podcast. Speaking of favorites, coming up on the next episode, it's two all-time favorites coming back to the podcast to have one heck of a great conversation from the brand new book, How Much Art Can You Take, which is released now on Radio Raheem Records. Al Baril and Nancy Baril are returning to the show. They, of course, worked hard to put out an incredible book. An unbelievable book about the history of SSD, a band that Al played guitar in and kind of led. You'll hear. Anyway, if you don't know, check out Al's first episode. Check out Nancy's first episode. Check out Nancy's book as well, I'm Not Holding Your Coat, a fantastic book as well. And get ready to dig into this one. This is a wild episode. This is a great episode. Keep rolling out the hits here at Turned Out of Punk, and I thank you all for listening each time we do. Well, that's it for me. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives and issues faced by Indigenous peoples all over the world matter. We need to protect trans kids and help trans people protect themselves and their rights. And make sure that these assholes that want to take away people's reproductive choices are stopped. Because we're not talking about political stuff here. This is just basic human rights stuff. There's lots of politics that can be talked about. And there's worthy issues in politics, certainly, that are very important, but this is just human rights. People deserve to be able to live free from hate and violence and discrimination. So if there's organizations in your community or in the world around you that are making positive change and affecting positive change, get involved. See if there's a way you can help. Donate your time. If you have some money, maybe they need some money. You can donate money. There's lots of ways you can help. Just try and make the world a little bit better and you'll feel better. Or just don't make it fucking worse. So just fuck all this Nazi bullshit, all this fascist bullshit. Let's move back to doing positive things. Contribute to your scene. Anyone can do this stuff. You can start a band. You can start a fanzine. You can start a podcast. Like, look, if this episode didn't inspire you to go out there and to try and, like, create your own culture, I don't know what would. Like, to see what, you know, Poopin' and these bands, like, three bands that ultimately put out tapes that changed like the entire landscape for music in that country. And I don't know, it's amazing to see what people can do and what punk kind of empowers you to do. So start a band, start a fanzine, start a podcast, do whatever. Maybe not a podcast, but you know, there's lots of other things you can do that are valid. Start a podcast, who gives a fuck? Donate your organs when you die because you don't need them anymore. And other people can really use them. I've seen it happen. I've seen miracles happen with my own eyes and when organs are donated. So, you know, sign the organ donor card. And try meditating. Just don't have to get an app. There's lots of free YouTubes. I'm sure there's on your... you can find places to meditate everywhere now. And just try it and stick with it. Because eventually these sorts of practices... that you pick up, they become part of just your routine and you end up just finding yourself falling into them and relying on them. And I didn't believe in it. And I've seen, once again, with my own eyes, how much it's made a positive change in my life. And I know certain people have been doing this for their entire lives and people have been doing these practices for centuries, but there's a reason they have. Millennia has probably been doing these practices, but there's a reason because it helps ground and center. Anyway, I'm not going to go into it. Because I'm not an expert at all. But that doesn't mean, you know, I can't tell you from my own experience. So go and try it. Oh, man, I'm tired. It's very late at night. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you stuck around this far into the podcast, I appreciate you doing that. You're probably just, like, indisposed right now. And you can't hit that stop button or that skip button. So you're just waiting for me to end this shit. Oh, man. Well, I could probably just end it right now, but I'm just going to give it a second and just, you know, hold it out. You know, you waited this long to chill with me and I'm happy to chill with you as long as you want to chill.